You know, you've heard it said before, and it seems that every day there are more things that happen that make us say again over and over, boy, times sure are changing. Times are not what they used to be. Well, you know, that's true no matter when we live or where we're from. Things definitely are not the same as they used to be. And that's not always a bad thing. Now, there are some of us who kind of get a little bit rebellious and resist the idea that things have got to change and progress and so forth. But, you know, this world would really be a rough place if every day was just exactly like the last one. I know what you're thinking. Some of you are saying, I don't know if that'd be so bad. It would, trust me. Change is good in some regards, but you know, there are some changes taking place out there that go against some of the kind of things that we've always counted on and appreciated for all of our lives. And those kind of changes are not comfortable. Those kind of changes make us say things like, I just don't know how much longer this is going to continue. How much longer is God going to let this earth stand? And you know, I'm afraid that people have probably been saying that ever since way back when. It does seem that every year is worse than the year before, and we wonder how much farther away from God and the principles of righteousness that the world can go, and in such a public fashion. And yet men have been rebelling against God ever since the beginning. One of the things, though, that brings it home to us is the older we get, it seems like things are changing faster and faster. Now, I'm not sure that's really the case. It just seems that way, especially from the standpoint of looking back over a longer period of time. When I think back to the years that I've lived on this earth, when I do some really serious thinking about it, I'm a little bit surprised sometimes, and even shocked maybe, at some of the things that I've seen that the people that I have to deal with and work with and relate to on a professional level in a job every day, when I think about the fact that I've seen things that they've never heard of. I mean, I've experienced and outlived rotary dial telephones, clotheslines in the backyard of every house, full service gas stations where if you wanted a map of the state, all you had to do was just ask for one and sit there patiently while the guy pumps your gas and checks your oil and the water in your radiator and everything. I can tell by the looks on some of the younger faces that I'm speaking a foreign language here. Paper shotgun shells. Now, that may not mean anything to most of you, but I remember when shotgun shells were made out of paper, not this new plastic stuff. But plastics, I mentioned that to a guy who's an engineer who works with me, and he's been through more college and education than I can imagine a fellow really wanting to do. And he looked at me with the blankest look on his face. He said, paper shotgun shells? I said, let's don't talk about that. Let's talk about something else. Things have a way of causing us to look back and start making marks at all of the years and all of the things that we've seen come and go. I mean, I know that kids who are starting to college this year were not born in the previous century, and I mean the 1990s. And that's kind of hard to figure out because I know where I was in the 1990s, and I remember things that happened in the 1990s. I remember my dad, when he was a lot younger than I am now. And that's really been a challenge for me to get my arms around. I'm so thankful that God has permitted me to live as long as he has on this earth. And I hope that he has plenty of more time in store for me. But I also would really enjoy seeing people in general, on the whole, kind of turn back toward God a little bit instead of pushing so hard to get away from him. Steve read that passage to us a few minutes ago from Romans chapter 13. And you know, Romans chapter 13 kind of gets a bad name because when you hear Romans chapter 13, you always think about what God said about the Christian's responsibility to adhere to governments. But you know, that part there in the last part of the chapter where Steve read to us from, those are some pretty chilling words. Those are some words that remind us that time is passing by and it's already too late for some things. And lest it be too late for the most important things, Paul says, it's time to wake up. It's time to start paying attention. It's time to be careful that we don't get caught up in the things that are going on all around us. The night is far gone and the day is at hand. Salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. I want us to look at another passage that speaks in a very similar vein. If you'll turn your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 3, the title of our lesson today comes from the first few words of verse 1 in 2 Timothy chapter 3. If you're there in your Bibles, I want you to follow along with me as we read the first five verses or so. Paul says, "But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people." That sounds almost like it comes right out of the headlines of a modern newspaper, doesn't it? Or right off of the 6 o'clock news at night. In the terms that Paul uses to describe the way things are in these last days. Let's take this thing apart and look at it a piece at a time. First of all, let's look at the time factor. Let's consider what he's talking about when he says, in the last days. There are very few subjects that are any more controversial, especially religious subjects, than that which some people refer to as the end times. And when people say the end times, they are usually referring to the little window of time that takes place just before the end of everything that we know. End times. There are all kinds of beliefs and doctrines that have been constructed around some of the ideas about the end times. The end times. Some say that we can see evidence of the end times in things that are happening naturally all over the world, like monsoons and volcanoes and great floods and so forth. I think they're misguided in that. I don't think that there's any indication that the end is near in those kind of things. They are often found to be identifying certain people and certain leaders and rulers in parts of the world, usually somewhere around the Middle East, and trying to identify, well, this character must be the dragon, or this must be Jezebel, and this is what this means. It means that the end is near. Please don't get caught up in that. In fact, there are some things that I suppose we probably need to go ahead and address some of the misconceptions that are in people's minds about the so-called end times. First of all, let me say this. Jesus is not going to come to this earth to set up a throne and reign over His kingdom or over anything from this earth. That idea has grown out of a misapplication of some prophetic passages in Revelation chapter 20 and other places where the Bible is talking about some things that I believe have already happened. And those things were talking about situations that those brethren to whom the book of Revelation was written needed encouragement, and they needed to understand that no matter what happened on this earth, God and His people are going to come out on top at the end. We may have to die first. In fact, God wants us to be faithful until death, and then we'll receive the crown of righteousness. Jesus is not coming here to set up an earthly kingdom. In the second place, we need to understand that there is not going to be this thing that some people call a rapture. If I understand what's being taught about the rapture, it's an idea that there's going to come a time when all of the good people on earth who are obedient to God are going to just in an instant be caught up. You've seen those bumper stickers, "In the event of the rapture, this automobile will be unmanned." And some people would have us to believe that there are going to be empty cars that are crashing on the side of the road. They're going to be empty schoolrooms, and stores will just all of a sudden not have many of their people shopping anymore. All the good folks are going to just disappear because God's going to take them up to heaven. Again, that's an idea that's been manufactured from a lot of the misunderstandings that people have about some so-called thousand-year reign of Jesus on the earth. There isn't going to be a period, an identifiable period of great tribulation where everybody is going to be persecuted. It's in an unbelievable way. That's not what the Bible teaches. A third misconception is the fact that this earth is going to be the future abiding place for all of the righteous people throughout eternity. And that's just not going to happen, because the Bible clearly says the earth and the works therein shall be burned up, destroyed. 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 10. The fact is, in the end, the righteous are going to spend eternity in heaven, and the wicked are going to spend eternity in hell. And these other ideas are just misconceptions that folks have come up with and said, well, this is how it's going to be in the last days. A lot of people have gotten caught up in some of the end times doctrines. The last days. That phrase occurs 5 times in the New Testament. The first time we find it is in Acts chapter 2 in Peter's sermon, when Peter says, "Men and brethren, these are not drunk as you suppose, but this is that which was spoken of by the prophet Joel when he said, in the last days things are going to happen." So Peter seems to indicate in his sermon there in Acts chapter 2 on Pentecost that the last days are already happening. Not some little small window right at the end, but the last days are already in progress. We find that phrase here in our lesson text in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. We find it also in Hebrews chapter 1 verse 2, which says that God in times past spoke unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son. In other words, Jesus is the message that we need to receive and believe. We find the phrase used one time in James chapter 5. I'm not sure it's a reference to this time from the cross to the end of time, but we know for sure that 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 3 is referring to that time when Peter talks about how in the last days there will be many who will be scoffers, who will be rejecting God's will. The last days that Paul talks about here, the final dispensation of time, which began when Jesus brought the Mosaic dispensation to an end by nailing the old law of Moses to his cross, so to speak. That's how Paul phrases it in Colossians 2 verse 14. Notice then what Paul said would come about in these last days here in 2 Timothy chapter 3. He says, if you're reading the King James Version, perilous times will come. The American Standard Version says grievous times. The New American Standard, difficult times. The NIV says terrible times will come. You know that word that's translated perilous, grievous, terrible? It only occurs two times in the entire New Testament. The other time we find it is in Matthew chapter 8, verse 28, where Matthew is describing those two men who were demon-possessed, who had been terrorizing a village that Jesus went to. And it describes them as fierce. That's the same word that he describes these days with. I appreciate what the pulpit commentary says. The pulpit commentary written back in the 1800s describes these times as difficult, trying, uneasy, or the like is nearer the sense. They are the times when the Christian hardly knows which way to turn or what to do. He has to live under a constant sense of hindrance and difficulty of one sort or another. Those are some true words. Those are some words that really should be given some serious consideration, because those are the words that describe the times in which we live. When the world is against God, the world is against Christianity. Notice that this is a condition that Paul says is underway when he writes to Timothy, and it's continuing until this day today. And it will continue until the Lord takes us home. The last days. And then take a look at this catalog of corruption. Paul goes through this list talking about the people who are going to characterize these times, our times. In fact, notice this list. He first talks about the selfish class. He talks about the class of arrogant boasters. He talks about those who are inhumane. He talks about those who defy godliness and honorableness. He talks about those who are recklessly evil, and those whose only desire is pleasure. We look around us today and we begin to recognize the condition of society, and we see a bold fulfillment of these warnings. Christians. No, let me back up. Not just Christians. Religious people are now in the minority in our nation. Do you know that? Let me cite you some proof. The turning point came in March of 2019. Those who keep track of this kind of thing said that it was in March of 2019 when the number of people who were filling out certain surveys and requests for information, when they were given three choices: religion, Protestant, Catholic, none. Ever since March of 2019 in the United States, the nuns are outnumbering everybody else. There are more people, survey-wise, who claim no religion than those who claim Catholic or Protestant. Now, I realize those are some broad categories, but think about that. Think about the fact that the nuns, N-O-N-E, those are the ones who outnumber religious people. You know, we've seen a lot of information here just in this 15 or 20 minutes or so. Let's take a close look at something that I think we need to take away from all this. Let's consider who we must not be. In view of what everybody around us, or so many people around us, are, in view of the description that's given there in 2 Timothy chapter 3 of the kind of attitudes and ideas that people are going to be driven by in the last days, in our days, in the day when religious people are outnumbered by those who claim no religion, we'd better not be among the comfortable. Someone says, well, you know, that's their business. I'm not too worried about that. Well, listen, you better be worried about it. Because it doesn't take a lot of two and two getting four before we reach the conclusion that there are going to really be some rough times ahead. And then comes the judgment. We can't afford to be comfortable with the idea that there is so much wickedness in this world. Somebody says, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, there may not be very much we can do about it, but if we're comfortable with it, that says a lot about us, and it's not good. In 1 Peter chapter 3, or chapter 2, verse 11, Peter reminds us that we don't need to get comfortable in this world because we're strangers and pilgrims here. We're just passing through. We're on the way to somewhere. This world is not our home. There are a lot of comforting things about this world. If you live in a comfortable house, that's good. If you've got shelter over you, if you've got enough to eat, if you've got clothes to wear, if you've got a vehicle to drive, if you're pretty well sufficient, that's great. But this is just temporary. We're on the way somewhere. We need to be on the way to heaven, and we need to see our lives as being on the journey to heaven. And so, first of all, let's don't be among the comfortable. I read a story about H.A. Ironsides, a denominational preacher from the last part of the 1800s and the first part of the 1900s. He was speaking to a gathering of religious people, and at the close of that gathering, he led the group in prayer, and he prayed that the Lord would come that night. And afterwards, he was accosted by a young woman who said, "How dare you pray that the Lord come tonight? I'm not ready for the Lord to come. It'll be a huge interruption to all of the things that I've got planned." You say, but I wonder how many of us kind of feel that way even though we never give it words. I've had people tell me, "Yeah, I want to go to heaven, but I'm sure not ready to leave this life." Well, there may be some problems evidenced there in that attitude, and I would encourage you to think seriously about that. Mr. Ironsides, I've heard, answered that woman. He said, "Young lady, the Lord's going to come when he comes, whether you're ready for him to come or not." Isn't that the truth? And so the business that we need to be about is to be ready, and that's our next point. We dare not be among the unprepared. In view of everything that's going on around us, in view of the attitudes of people who are so openly and blatantly against God, doesn't that kind of work as an encouragement factor that says, we need to be getting ready to meet the Lord? I don't mean you need to sell all your stuff and become a hermit and move up on top of a mountain and sit there all the time and pray. And so that's not what I'm talking about. You know that's not what I mean. You remember that story that Jesus told in Matthew chapter 25, the first part of the chapter, about the foolish and wise virgins? And what distinguished them from one another was the fact that the wise ones made provision for what was about to happen, and the foolish ones didn't make any preparations. They didn't bring any extra oil for their lamps, and their lamps went out while they were waiting for the bridegroom to come, and so they had to leave and go and try to find more oil for their lamps. And while they were gone, the bridegroom came. We don't need to be among the unprepared, and we don't need to be among the sidetracked. I don't know about you, but that may be one of the biggest hurdles I face in my life. I'm a hands-on kind of guy. I got to be busy. I got to be doing it all the time. You won't find me sitting around. If you do, you'll find me asleep. I'm up and going. I've got more things I want to try to get done than you would ever believe. And if you think it's all the right things that I want to get done, just ask my wife. She can give you the list that I've not even gotten close to yet of the things that need to be done. But I've got to be doing something. And you know, that may be an honorable way to live, but that's not always the best way if you're constantly getting sidetracked with all of these things that need to be done. All of these things that you want to accomplish. We dare not be among the sidetracked, those who stay so busy going to and fro and paying attention to this or that or the other, when what we really need to be paying attention to is the spiritual situation in our lives, our families' lives, our brothers and sisters' lives. It's been a few years now since the Gallup Polling Institute revealed some information that they had come up with after a number of surveys. They said, we find very little difference in ethical behavior between churchgoers and those who are not active religiously. Very little difference in the ethical behavior between people who go to church all the time and people who don't claim any religion. They went on to say that the levels of lying and cheating and stealing are remarkably similar between the two groups. You say, David, I can't believe that. Americans have always been known for moral, ethical principles. That may be true. But don't delude yourself into believing that it's still true today and that it's going to always be true. We're living in a world that is very, very sinful. We need to be sure that we don't get sidetracked into the parts of it that will spiritually destroy us. In the last days, in these days, things are bad. Things have been bad ever since Paul's day, and they just seem to get worse and worse. Let's make sure it doesn't take us down. Are you a child of God? Have you obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ? Have you become a Christian in the way that the New Testament teaches people did in that day? Believing in Jesus as God's Son, repenting and turning away from sin, confessing Jesus publicly as Lord and Master, and being baptized so that sins may be washed away and the cleansing blood of Jesus can purify and clean our souls. If you haven't done that, this would be there will never be a better time than today to do that. If you have done that but have become unfaithful in your service to God, there won't ever be a better time to come back and get all of that straightened out. Rededicate yourself to the Lord's service. He's waiting with open arms to receive all who will come. And if you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.